What's going on, Numbers fam? This is DJ Ambush. I want to welcome you to another episode of Ask a Black Doctor with myself and Dr. Makosi Dubé. This week, we have only one guest this week. We actually have one guest this week. We are joined by one of our co-hosts, Dr. Evans. How are you today, sir?
Man, I am doing well. It's good. It's Wednesday, so hump day, recording day. I'm excited. Good to be engaged, folks. Passing it on to Dr. Evans.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure to see everyone. Everyone's doing and looking healthy. So, glad to be here. And I think
Hi, doing great. Real pleasure to be here today. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you so much, Dr. Herman. Could you talk a little bit about your background and what brings you to this work?
Sure. So, I am at OHSU. I'm a family physician, but I also serve at OHSU as the Chief Primary Care and Population Health Officer. So I got into this role a little bit when we heard about the nature of long COVID and how it was starting to affect people at the early stages of the pandemic. And as there was nothing prior to this, we did our best to try to establish a program to help support patients in our community. And that's how I got into it.
Excellent.
That's awesome. How many centers are there countrywide that have long COVID clinics?
Good question. So there's a handful. Every state has one now. And depending on the state, the population, they have a few more. Most of them tend to be centered in larger academic institutions. In Oregon, we were the first one and the only one for a while, but we also have about two more that have since sort of grown up. And total, I would probably say there's in the order of about 40 to 50. Mm-hmm. I would also add that because it's new and there's only a handful of programs, we all are trying to learn from each other. So we actually have a national consent. We also have a national group that tries to have shared learning and be able to kind of understand what serves patients best.
Dr. Herman, what are the processes involved with sharing this information from center to center? How do you guys do that?
So essentially, it was an organic process. As I was trying to learn how best to serve our patients, I reached out to other academic institutions, spoke to a few other physicians, and we agreed that we should all be doing this together as opposed to having to connect with each other offline. And so a few of us started by the American Association for Physical Medicine Rehabilitation Doctors, kind of rehabilitation doctors. And within that, we were able to really have a groundswell of about 40 different clinics. And every month we meet, we talk about what's working, what we can learn from each other. And we're actually to publish guideline statements to help clinicians all around the country. And I'm taking those guideline statements from a primary care lens and trying to the medical literature for primary care and other teaching instruments. And I also, in Oregon, we have multiple programs to reach out to the different physicians in Oregon to try to help them as they navigate this condition.
I think what would be awesome is if we can start off by having shared terminology, right? That folks in the community can talk about the same thing. So when we say long COVID, as a clinician, know what you mean, but what does long COVID mean? And
let's get on that same sheet of music, right? It's important. So long COVID refers to a set of symptoms or medical conditions that seem to arise or persist more than 28 days from the original COVID infection, from that first acute COVID infection. And these symptoms can be really broad and diverse and complex and troublesome. It can affect any organ system. It can affect things such as their breathing. It can make their heart jump and have palpitations. It can affect their emotional well-being, their digestion. It makes them incredibly tired and it depletes them of energy. It gives them this sense of brain fog. Patients are really suffering with this broad and complex arrangement of symptoms that started 28 days or persist more than 28 days after that initial infection when most people seem to get better. So it's been called long COVID. folks that have long COVID sort of refer to themselves with pride as sort of long haulers, which has kind of a good ring to it. I actually like it. It's kind of the first time that's been used in medicine, you know, so it's got a good ring to it. But so they refer themselves as long haulers. Sort of researchers have another name for it. They call it post-acute sequelae of SARS-CoV-2, which is the virus that causes COVID. So it has a variety of different names, but most people by now know it as long COVID or long haulers. Other things to know about it is it's really a complex interaction as the body tries to fight this COVID infection. Sometimes the systems tip in the wrong direction too much, too aggressively. And with the immune system where it tries to maybe react a little too strongly. And in this reaction, it creates a broad sense of inflammation in the body, kind of like when you get a really bad flu, but it just sort of supercharges that. And this can actually affect 10 to 30% of the people that get COVID, which is kind of scary. When you think about the numbers and you think about how many people, you know, the 80 some million people in this country that have had COVID, that's pretty large numbers, right? And in Oregon, you're looking from anywhere from 7 to 21,000 people that are likely experiencing this. And that's with some pretty big significant impacts on public health. It's a very, very concerning condition. People can get this if they had mild symptoms or severe symptoms. In fact, most people who we see with long COVID in our clinic actually had just mild symptoms. So it's kind of scary that way too. And all the more reason that we so encourage people to get vaccinated and to get boosted and to wear masks because, boy, you sure wouldn't want this. So I hope that helps.
Certainly. So you spoke about that there's a myriad of symptoms. And we've been talking about this for a couple of months too. So how does one know when they actually have long COVID? Because there are so many different ways that it presents.
Yeah, it can be tricky because also people tend to have other health issues. And so sometimes that sort of inflammatory response can make other health issues feel more exacerbated or resonating. You know, they can just be amplified and you feel things more. And then you get this new symptom and you're like scratching your head. Was this my old or is this something new? How do I sort this all out? And so the best way to kind of help people understand that this really could be long COVID is, did this seem like something that really came on with COVID or has come on since COVID? So this seems uniquely new. Other times we ask the question, is this something that as really affecting the quality of your life now? Whereas before you enjoyed a relatively good quality of life, but now because of these new symptoms, you're not able to function the same way. You're not able to take care of your family or work. Something's just not right. It's just your level of functioning has really declined. So we see that with particularly around this issue of fatigue. One of the hallmarks of this long COVID, which we've also seen in another condition called chronic fatigue syndrome, is this idea of post-exertional malaise. In other words, you try to do a few things, which would seem normal, doing your laundry, walking the dog, whatever the case may be. And then you feel absolutely depleted of your energy, not necessarily that day, but the day after. So we see people that try to do normal routine activities 12 to 72 hours later, they're tapped out, they're exhausted, and they scratch their heads and they're like, what did I do? I didn't do anything that should make me so tired. And so that's a really great tip off that you're experiencing something that could be related to long COVID. Brain fog is another one. We know that, you know, we all sort of at times don't feel like our sharpest and it'd be good to get a cup of coffee to get going. But there is something unique about this brain fog with long COVID that reminds people of almost like a concussion where they have difficulty finding the right words. Their memory doesn't seem as sharp. Their attention seems to be dull. And so that idea that, you know, I'm just not thinking clearly the way I used to, and this infection should have passed. So I'm tired and I'm not thinking clearly. I have this fog in my brain. I wonder what's up. Another thing that we see that people should be kind of tipped off that they might have long COVID is kind of this cluster of unusual symptoms. So they can feel air hungry, like they just can't get enough air into their lungs. And yet they think they're otherwise fine. And we also see with many patients with long COVID, so many of their typical signs, so many of the typical studies that they do with the doctors are relatively normal. So if they find themselves feeling air hungry, it's hard to breathe, or they have chest discomfort when they're breathing, that's a good clue. And then, of course, the palpitations. Sometimes people with long COVID get this condition known as POTS, which stands for postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. So what'll happen is they'll be sitting down and they're doing great, but then they have to get up to get something from the microwave or to go to tend to something with their children. And the next thing they know, their heart is racing and it's, and they can feel it beating. They feel lightheaded and dizzy and woozy, and it ends good. And once they sit down, they seem better. There's this postural nature to their symptoms. Those are some of the classic symptoms that we see with it, but it, truth be told, COVID. So if something is affecting their quality of life uniquely different from before, it's a good sign.
But it's sad to, as Dr. Harmon said, I mean, I think it speaks a lot for also what COVID does to the body. I mean, there's a prothrombotic effect where, you know, there are clots all over. And people have always surmised whether or not there's these little micro clots all over, you know, affecting your lungs, your brain, that could sort of, you know, cause some of these symptoms, may not explain everything. I think the second thing too, I don't know if this is, you know, it's saying misery loves company, but, you know, for so many folks who've had, you know, as Dr. Harmon said, long chronic fatigue syndrome and other sort of post-infectious, just feeling yucky. I think this gives a lot of credence to the fact that, you know, there's probably a lot of other infections that happen in people where after people recover, they just don't feel back to themselves. You know, people said this for Lyme disease, people said this for, you know, infections with things like Epstein-Barr virus and post-mono. And so I think, you know, that we're learning more that, you know, a virus may not just be a virus after the infection is quote unquote over. And that there are these, you know, pronounced effects that people, again, as Dr. Harmon was saying.
So correct me if I'm wrong. I do believe I heard you say that we're seeing long COVID at a rate as high as 30% of people that are contracting it?
Yeah, we don't have the best numbers because there were not a lot of really perfect definitions of long COVID. Okay. And there's a lot of variability in how people get tested and how we don't have a blood test to say you have long COVID. Right. So the numbers aren't as precise and sharp as we would like, but the current estimates, most physicians generally feel it's somewhere between 10 to 30%.
Okay. All right.
So the CDC has a number that they're quoting. I think it's 23 million people who are thought to have been, who have suffered from long COVID. Mm.
And this is, again, coming from a very layman's standpoint here, this is a situation that can change based on the variants, right? Because the different variants will affect different sections of the population differently. So maybe this particular person didn't get long COVID or even get COVID, but the next variant that comes out that presents itself differently, that person may become susceptible.
Yeah, that's a good point. So we don't have a lot of information yet that says each the risk of getting long COVID from Delta variant compared to Omicron. But what we do know is that it's affecting all of them. All the variants seem to be having aspects of long COVID. Another thing that we have seen is that people that have been vaccinated and boosted can have breakthrough infections, and they too are at risk for long COVID. But here's the good news. If you have been vaccinated and boosted, your likelihood of getting long COVID is reduced by half. So you are half as likely to get long COVID if you've been vaccinated. So that's the good news for that. But indeed, we don't quite know how each variant yet affects or its sort of characteristic profile long COVID.
So you bring up a very good point, which is vaccination and boosting and how that's protective in terms of not just getting COVID, right? But if you're to get a breakthrough case, you're protected somewhat from getting long COVID. We've tried to advocate and try to encourage people to get their vaccines and to get boosted in part because we understand that, hey, if you're boosted, if you're vaccinated and boosted, you reduce the chance of getting it, but also reduce the chance of getting
it. So I would build on that and frame it. We don't have a cure for this, but we do know that if you don't get it, you don't have it. So the best way to prevent this is just to get vaccinated and boosted so you don't get it.
Right. I just wanted to add one thing too. You know, I think one of the most concerning things, of course, you know, a lot of folks, Dr. Herman, sees adults and probably maybe some kids. I don't see any kids, but, you know, one of the things we realize is that this is not just, you know, limited to older folks. There's definitely growing data that kids can get long COVID. And, you know, I think this is scary, you know, brain fog and you're studying for a test. What does this mean for a kiddo at, 12 years old with long COVID? What does this mean for this person at 50 years old? And I think those are the scary things for me if you have children. And again, just to underline and highlight what the group is saying about getting your kids vaccinated, the importance of, you know, having prevention as the first step to prevent them from getting long COVID in the first place.
That's thank you, Dr. Evans. That's a really important point because we actually do have a dedicated team working with children that had long COVID. And anyone who gets this, their life is turned upside down. But for the kids, you can imagine all the social pressure on you and you're trying to do your best to make your future and everything just comes to a grinding halt. We've had star athletes that can no longer participate in scholarship opportunities that are no longer there. And kids that were working hard to get into good, to universities and colleges, those are put on hold. And those can be really devastating. So that's a great call out. Thank you.
Because COVID, long COVID, can have such a monumental effect to people, no matter where they fall along the age spectrum, has there been a conversation about referring to this as a disability?
Yeah, so it is. So so as of like July of 2021, COVID became formally a disability under the ADA. Section 504. So patients who've been suffering from this for over a year, they can be eligible for that. It's very important that this isn't easy to get, right? So it's not a turnkey type of process. And so it's very important that patients work with their doctors to make sure the right documentation is established to demonstrate the areas that they have difficulties, where they have deficits in their functioning, where there has been impact to their everyday work, their everyday school, their everyday life, so that we can really capture what's changed. And then to also have clinicians talk about the accommodations that are needed. So to really talk about how things have changed in their life for a full year to be able to support if anyone who wants to earnestly try to get disability and then for protection, and that's great. Also to keep in mind too, that there is protection for people under FMLA, the Family Medical Leave of Absence Act, so that sometimes people just need respite. They need a break. They need some time to recover. And so it's easy for clinicians to help them get the appropriate time they need from their work so they're not at risk for losing their employment and work with their employers. And that's a legality formality that has to be there. So those two things are mental.
I like how you highlight the need for clear documentation, right? So that this can be traced and diagnosed as opposed to folks simply saying, I've had these symptoms for years to see, but it's very, very important that you're talking to your primary care provider and clearly documenting what's going on.
That's brand new information to me that this is considered a disability, and it just makes sense, right? What are some other points about long COVID that you all wish were more better represented in the messaging, in the media, just in public conversation? Some key points that you think would be helpful for all of us to get a grasp on what it is that we're dealing with. We're in the middle of a surge. Things are going back up right now. I just got word that the Big Crit concert just got canceled because of Delta. We've been promoting this concert over the last couple of weeks here in Portland. Omicron. Yes, because of Omicron. Yes, because of COVID, the Schwester just said. But yeah, so what are some of the things that you would like to see discussed more frequently, specifically around long COVID, from media organizations, or just part of the public conversation that you think will be more helpful in helping people understand what we're dealing with?
I think, first of all, I know this sounds simple, but this is real. I think getting it out there that this is a real thing that happens with COVID infections and not to take it lightly and the people that have had this or their family members that have it, to please be supportive, understanding, and validate that experience. Again, people can have many conditions before this, but when people do get long COVID, this is devastating. And to validate the experience and how this affects their quality of life, and see how you can support your each other, you know, to really ask, how can we support you in this recovery? That's really important. I think we talked about the prevention, which is enormous. I won't talk about that anymore. The other thing I would point out, maybe Chris has some other ideas here too, but is for folks that get long COVID, the most important thing that we ask them to do is pace, to stop, rest, and pace before they undertake any activity that could be draining of them physically, emotionally, or stress. All three of those can trigger this post-exertional malaise and this profound fatigue, which then resonates all these other cluster of symptoms. So to really understand that they should be, in just everything they do, they should be thinking about it so that they plan it to conserve their energy, they mind their posture, and they pace through it. They take their time doing these things. So those are kind of the three biggest things. It's real, prevention, and stop, rest, and pace. And then to be patient as they go through the trajectory of recovery. Most patients do get better, but there are certainly a handful that are still struggling after a year and some change. And so those would be my points.
And, you know, just as Dr. Herman said, to be kind to yourself, give yourself the time and grace to recover. I think the thing too that just rings is that, you know, I've talked to folks who've, you know, said, oh, I got mild symptoms, you know, I have natural immunity, but I don't want to take the, you know, the chance that, you know, your natural infection is going to be the person that ends up with long COVID. You know, people have made it very blasé. Oh, I just had the sniffle. But, you know, there may be more to it than, you know, the sniffle for some people and just recovering. So again, I think as everyone said here in the group, the real importance of getting vaccination, you know, speaks volumes, because this can be life altering in so many different ways.
One last thought. Sorry, no, forgive me.
Go ahead.
Also, to make sure you get care early. We know with folks that have had chronic fatigue syndrome, the sooner they sort of try to get help and get into a recovery program, the better. And don't push yourself, because pushing yourself is what can prolong the symptoms and the recovery. So, you know, don't push yourself with any activities that could make things worse.
So just to add what's been shared by Dr. Herman and Dr. Evans, so some things to consider, right? Our test positivity rate, which is a good measure of how many, the disease burden in the community, meaning how many people are infected in the community, has been going up. It's about 10.5 this week. So we typically want that to be lower than 5%. So, which tells us that there are a lot of people in the community who are infected, and this disease is increasing. As DJ Ambush said earlier, we're seeing activities. So we just have to be mindful of those things and continue to practice those things that we've talked about in the past, right? Making sure that we're wearing masks, good fitting, well-fitting masks, and making sure that practicing good physical distancing and, of course, getting up to date with your vaccines. So those mitigation factors that we've talked about over the last two or so years still work. And we're not at a point where the governor is going to come out and say we're going to have a masking mandate for certain things, indoor masking, for instance. We're not at that point yet, but the numbers are going up, and let's do the right thing to protect each other, protect ourselves and protect each other.
I love that the point, there's a point that keeps being reiterated as far as how to deal with the infection, and bringing a lot of attention to us taking our time, slowing down, breathe it out, rest and recovery. Now, we know communities of color struggle with rest and recovery, because we're so frequently behind the eight ball and we're playing catch up across society, period. Where we are in the caste system, we just don't have as much time to not work twice as hard in order to make ends meet. So how exactly do we tailor that messaging? How exactly do we talk to communities of color specifically to that point? I mean, it's one thing to say, hey, you know, if you don't take the time to rest and recover, you will not have your faculties be able to do it, these other things you're rushing to do and just trying to, you know, to keep your head above the water. What are some of the things that I can imagine you would be, some of the conversations you could be having in your communities, Dr. Bokosa Dube and Dr. Evans?
So I'd say the most important thing is we need the government to step in, right? To provide, not just, I'm not talking about the federal government, I'm talking about, you know, the governor's office. We need OHA, state and local governments to step in and say, hey, here are some resources for people who need to take the time off. We did that at the beginning of the pandemic, right? When people needed to isolate or to quarantine, we provided wraparound services. Mm-hmm. We should be extending these wraparound services for people who have long COVID, right? People who have well-documented long COVID. We should be providing these services so that they don't end up on the street. They don't end up experiencing houselessness. I'm sure some of you may have heard that the headcount that's done once a year was done recently, and they found that about, they released the numbers showing that there were about 5,000 people experiencing houselessness in Portland. This was back in January. And that's 5,000 people experiencing houselessness. That's a lot of people, right? And a lot of that has to do with folks. Some folks don't have the resources to be housed, right? Or some folks don't, we're not providing sufficient wraparound services to make sure that we're catering to the needs of those individuals. So my ask, not just to our listeners here, to our politicians, to our leaders in Portland, and the county level and in the in state government, is provide the wraparound services so that folks don't have to go to work when they're not well. So that when folks are diagnosed with long COVID, they can take the time they need to recover, to recuperate. Passing it on to Dr. Herman, Dr. Evans.
You know, I think one of the things, and thank you, DJ Ambush, for bringing that up. You know, I think, you know, I know so many folks who work, you know, hourly work, and, you know, their benefits are little to none. And so for them to be able to stay home and do those things are probably, you know, it's a choice between sort of economics and, you know, your health, and you should never have to make that choice. You know, I think one of the biggest things that communities of color have had is in the community. It's not a perfect solution, you know, only church, whatever that means for, you know, providing that additional help, you know, just being able to, I can tell you that, you know, when my mom worked, my grandma took care of us. And so I think it's really important to have those conversations with your family, like, hey, I am going through long COVID, I'm getting a little extra help, whatever that looks like for your community. And I think, you know, if the government is not going to sort of provide the pathway, I think we need to create it ourselves within our own communities.
It's hard for me to add. I think the only thing I would say is, I really amplified what Dr. Evans just said about getting support. And sometimes that support is with the activities, you know, helping do the shopping, but in other times it's that emotional support. Dr. Evans has probably seen many of these patients like I do. And when they actually come into your office or virtual appointment, they almost always are in tears because there's finally someone listening and gets it. Because oftentimes at home, it is so stressful and everyone's just got to do things and it's hard for people to really, really get it. So I encourage, if patients can, to bring their family members to the appointments so that they, there is that sort of a greater fostering of understanding of what's happening to them, so they can get that empathy, and that's so needed for emotionally to be able to recover. Because, I mean, you know what it's like when you've been sick for like a couple days, more than a week, you're just dying to get back to work. Well, imagine if you can't do that over the course of months. And so it just wears on people. And so to be able to have that emotional support from their loved ones, from their family, from their community, religious groups, it means the world. So that's it's the time to ask for help and to reach out to people that understand and want to listen.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much for that. We are at the end of the show, but before we close this out, I want to, you know, open up the opportunity for anyone to leave some final messages for our listeners, especially as we're talking about taking a serious look at what long COVID is, how this will be impacting us in the future moving forward. I mean, it's here. Lifelong COVID, it's here. COVID's here to stay. Any final words from anyone?
So I'll end off with what I always end on. You know, take care of yourself. If you can take care of somebody else, if you have it in you and you have the means to do so, of somebody else.
I would echo that. And what Dr. Evans said is take good care of yourself, give yourself time to recover, and to take your time and get better.
You know, the thing I'd probably say is that, you know, COVID is a new reality in terms of how we adjust, how we, you know, reconnect with family and computer and our family and our community. But the pandemic is not over. And I think we also need to move in the space that we still have to do all of our, you know, make sure that we wash our hands, we wear our masks, we don't go out to the party if you're sick. So I think, you know, yes, things are like opening back up, but we need to be careful.
Very good points. Thank you all so much.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Absolutely. We will catch you all next week.